This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. As we learned before the break, there are movements for and against independence in Puerto Rico. But in the meantime, the island stays in limbo with representatives in the United States Congress, but no say in who becomes president and many other such indignities. However, there is at least one international body that considers the island its own sovereign nation. And that is the International Olympic Committee, which has exclusive authority to determine which states count as countries for the purposes of Olympic law. And the IOC regards Puerto Rico as a country. And that's how the stage came to be set for one of the most epic showdowns in the island's sporting history. Here's Alana.
Without a doubt, there is a deep connection between being Puerto Rican and rooting for our sports teams. And yes, people all over the world love sports and are proud of their athletes. But in Puerto Rico, the stakes are just higher. Because Puerto Rico, despite being a U.S. colony, competes in international sporting events like the Olympics on its own, under its own flag, as if we were an independent country. Journalist Noel Algarin, who has covered sports in Puerto Rico for many years, put it this way.
The only place where we can call ourselves sovereign is in sports. In sports, we get to be someone. And then we get chances in a more symbolic way to face the country that owns you in some way.
We're going to tell a story about one of those chances, a time when Puerto Rico faced off against the United States in basketball on the sporting world's largest stage. Journalist Julio Ricardo Varela was born in Puerto Rico and grew up there. But when he was in first grade, he moved with his mom to the Bronx and would go back and forth to the island over the years. But he never had any doubt as to who his team was. It was always Puerto Rico.
Flor Meléndez was a coach of the team.
Bueno, mi nombre es Flor Meléndez.
And he was a legend in Puerto Rico. In a documentary about the 1979 games, you can see him screaming at players and gesturing wildly. He's looking really sharp with this thick black mustache and fro. Flor went on to become one of the national team's all-time most decorated coaches. And his story kind of runs parallel to the story of Puerto Rican basketball. So Flor grew up in a big family.
Once hermano.
The oldest of 11 siblings, they lived in public housing.
Caserío público.
We're talking 1960. Flor started playing basketball at his local YMCA. Then as a teenager, he played in the Puerto Rican League. And pretty early on, Flor figured he had a talent for coaching. He describes his coaching style as
fuerte,
tough.
Yo soy una persona que me gusta la disciplina.
Discipline heavy. And Flor got into coaching right around this kind of magic moment for Puerto Rican basketball. Coaches like Flor started visiting New York City and scouting the courts where New Yorkans were playing street ball. And they started convincing these players to leave their lives behind to come play professionally in Puerto Rico. Here are these amazing Afro-Puerto Ricans who learned the craft in the mecca of the sport and brought it back. It was a different kind of basketball than people were used to in Puerto Rico. It was a faster rhythm of play with big dunks. And it was fun. Like, that type of basketball is fun. These were the boom years for Puerto Rican basketball.
In
Con el pase para Jimmy Corden, adelantado para Willy Piñón.
And as the team kept winning and becoming better, basketball in Puerto Rico became the sport. Fans filled the stadiums. By the 90s, many from that generation of great New Eurecan players had retired, but they had inspired a new wave of Puerto Rican-born players. And those players, they took the team to even greater heights.
Ganando Puerto Rico.
Ganar un décimo Juegos Panamericanos.
Gold in the 1991 Pan American Games. Gold in the 1993 Central American Games. And maybe the biggest accomplishment of all, fourth place in the 1990 World Championships. Puerto Rico, the fourth best team in the world. That's pretty good. With Puerto Rico having made a name for itself on the international stage, Flor Meléndez got opportunities to coach in Argentina and Panama, but it was always clear to him that coaching the Puerto Rican national team, that was a different kind of responsibility.
Yo tengo un dicho que
he has this saying.
La bola de baloncesto es el alma. Nosotros no tenemos ejército.
He thinks about it like this. Puerto Rico doesn't have an army, so we, the national basketball team, we are the ones that have to represent the country. He says that the basketball is a weapon, and the basketball jersey is actually a soldier's uniform. It's like you respect it like you respect a flag. He told me he had this ritual he would do with the national team. That at the season's first practice, where they would put on their national team jerseys for the first time,
pues yo le entregaba a ellos.
He'd go down the line and hand out little Puerto Rican flag pins to all the players. He says the players would get so emotional about it. And whenever they'd face the United States in international play, those games had a special kind of weight. It was the chance for his soldiers to go to war. The war we haven't been able to have to win our independence, he says. Puerto Rico was generally pretty outgunned in this war. The U.S., after all, was and is the global superpower of basketball, especially after the 1992 Barcelona Olympics. What happened was, a few years before, the International Basketball Federation made a change to their rules to allow NBA players in international competitions. And that change was huge.
This summer, the U.S. Olympic basketball team will make history. The dream team of Jordan, Bird, Ewing, Robinson, Pippen, Drexler, Mullins, Barkley, and Magic.
That first dream team that went to Barcelona in 1992 was legendary.
This collection of superstars has been unselfishly magnificent.
It wasn't just a sports team. It was a cultural phenomenon.
You've got yourself the gold medal meal.
What you want, it's what you get.
At McDonald's today!
Gold medal? It's in the bag.
And they kicked everybody's ass. It wasn't even close. It wasn't even fun to watch. They were that good.
And there it is. And the dream team win gold.
And from then on, the players changed. But the dream team was here to stay. The U.S. won gold again in 1996 at the Atlanta Olympics.
The United States has won the gold.
In 2000, at the Sydney Olympics, same story.
And it's all smiles now from Dream Team 4.
And then you get to the 2004 Olympics in Athens, and the U.S. team was an institution at that point. And the first game they were going to play that Olympics was with Puerto Rico. The 2004 team was stacked. Allen Iverson, AI, Dwayne Wade, D-Wade, Tim Duncan, one of my favorite players of all time. I mean, the team even had LeBron James in his early days. LeBron James. These guys were invincible in the Olympics. I mean that literally. Since NBA players were allowed to play, they had never lost an Olympic game. They were the Death Star. And if the U.S. team was the Death Star, the Puerto Rico team was definitely the ragtag rebel alliance. The players were mostly local stars from the Baloncesto Superior Nacional, the league in Puerto Rico. You had José Ortiz, also known as Piculín.
Oh, that's the leader, the rock, the legend.
That's Julio Cesar Torres. He's the filmmaker behind a great Puerto Rican basketball documentary called New Yorican Basket. You had Eddie Casiano.
Eddie, man. Eddie was the firecracker. He would go toe-to-toe with you. And if he had to fight, he would fight.
McGrady and Casiano going nose-to-nose.
Rolando Jorutinet.
He was all about the craft, very disciplined, and a great defender.
And a lot of other really talented guys. Larry Ayuso, Bobby Joe Hatton. And then there was Carlos Arroyo.
Carlos Arroyo was the young gun.
Arroyo por el cristal, su primer canasto de la noche.
Anxious to prove himself with a lot of talent.
As Arroyo knocks down that jumper.
Carlos was in the NBA. He was a starting point guard with the Utah Jazz that season and was on a path to becoming a legend.
Arroyo to the angle right, gets behind tag, shaking and baking, and they double him momentarily. Now he goes right to the hoop, reverse to the right side, bank it up and in, count it, he's fouled.
At 6'2", he was a lot shorter than most other NBA guys, but Carlos was fast, and he played with energy, and he played with heart, and we all loved him. So a few weeks before the Olympics, the Puerto Rican team goes to Florida for a week of practice and a series of warm-up games against the U.S. team. This is strangely standard practice leading up to these big international competitions. And at these games, they're playing man-to-man defense, which is what it sounds like. Each player follows a player on the other team and sticks to them. And Puerto Rico, because of their size or lack of it, you know, the Americans are bigger, they were faster. They wanted to play zone defense where you literally stay in a zone and you defend a set area of the court. During one of those games, the American coach went up to the Puerto Rican coaches and asked for a favor. He said, can you please not play zone during this game? And it was one of those like Flor Melendez moments to be like, insert mysterious discovery music. Interesting. They don't want to play against a zone. He says they kept quiet and pulled a classic jíbaro move. He says whenever city people visit the mountains, they think the jíbaros, the country people, are simpletons. But secretly, they always have something up their sleeve.
Coming up, the Puerto Rican national basketball team goes to the Olympics.
This is On the Media.
On the Media is supported by Progressive Insurance with a Name Your Price tool, providing information on a range of insurance coverage and price options. More at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's progressive. And by Hint, water with a touch of true fruit flavor. Hint water is available in over 25 flavors, including watermelon, mango, and peach, with no sugar, sweeteners, or calories, in stores or delivered from drinkhint.com.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. We pick up the story in the summer of 2004. The Puerto Rican national basketball team has arrived in Athens to compete in the Olympics. Journalist Julio Varela takes it from here.
On the morning of the game in Athens, the Puerto Rican team is expecting the worst. Rolando Arutined was in his dorm room in the Olympic Village when one of the coaches on the staff, Julio Toro, barged in the room.
Early in the morning, Julio comes in. He's like, hey, you guys, what's going on, Julio? It's too early, man. So I want you guys to know that we're going to do something different today. I said, what are you talking about? He's like, well, you have to wait and see.
A few hours later, the players are gathered in the locker room, and the coaches bust out their plan. They thought maybe they had found the weakness in the Death Star. They're going to do a variation on the zone defense that the Americans didn't want to play against back in Florida. For all you basketball nerds out there, a variation known as a triangle and two defense, with the goal of forcing the U.S. team to take outside shots.
So, Lou, we looked at each other like, hey, you know, never done it. We lose by 30 every time, so might as well try it.
The game was set to start at 8 p.m. Athens time, 1 p.m. in Puerto Rico. To jog my memory for this story, I recently rewatched the game. I'm excited.
This is the first time I've put this on since 2004. You can see in the broadcast that the arena in Athens was pretty full. Everybody wanted to see the debut of the U.S. team. The whistle blows. The start of the game, it was pretty tight back and forth.
United States leading early by two.
Puerto Rico didn't really start off strong. They just played enough to keep it close.
An impressive start for Puerto Rico.
I was like, okay, all right. How long is this going to last? This will be entertaining until the U.S. scores like 80 points in a row, and then we're down by 60.
And there's the buzzer ending the first quarter.
But for me, things really kicked off in the second quarter when Carlos Arroyo found Piculín with a super cool pass. Here it comes. Look at this pass. Hello.
Carlos Arroyo. Oh, what a ball fake.
And then it begins. Something just clicks. And Puerto Rico has this sequence of amazing plays.
Excellent ball handling from Carlos Arroyo. Bodies flying all over the place. Arroyo with the steal.
Floor watch Puerto Rico nails shot after shot. He says he noticed the U.S. players in a bad mood, frustrated, and it was probably because the Puerto Rican strategy seemed to be working. Here's Rolando Rutina.
You know, we were pretty physical and we were really giving it to them, you know, and it's something that they were not used to it. And it was our turn to talk trash.
Go ahead and shoot it. You don't want to shoot it, right? Go ahead, shoot it. Let me see it. Let me see your shot, right?
As the second quarter ticked down, Puerto Rico's lead just kept growing.
It's hard to believe I'm saying this, but the United States trails by 20. And there's the buzzer ending the first half. A disastrous first half for the United States.
At halftime, the score was 49-27. 22-point lead for Puerto Rico. And you could see it on the faces of the American coaches. They looked so dejected. Meanwhile, at 1 p.m. in Puerto Rico, Ira Martinez, then a sports editor at El Nuevo Día, was getting ready to turn on the game when his wife asked him to go to the mall with her to pick something up. Reluctantly, Iram goes to the mall and finds a store window with the televisions turned to the game. About 100 people were crowded around doing the same thing. And to Iram's surprise, Puerto Rico's doing pretty well in the first minutes. But he thinks, who cares? They're just going to come back and slam us. So he heads back home in the car when he gets a call from his daughter. Are you watching the game? She asks. Iram's like, no, why bother? And she says, we're winning. Soon Iram is getting frantic calls from the newspaper. Where are you? Get over here. We're beating the U.S. and we're beating them good.
Y yo, no puede ser.
Even the Puerto Rican players in the locker room at halftime were surprised at the score. Here's Rolando.
First of all, my first thought was, wow, I have more pressure now than I did at the beginning of the game. Because it's a brand new game, 20 brand new minutes. And you know they're going to come back stronger.
You thought the Americans were going to make a run eventually and come back and beat us. They had to. The third quarter is also really back and forth. The U.S. makes points.
Good drive to the basket. Pretty move from Allen Iverson.
But Puerto Rico maintains its lead.
Arroyo inside and the lead back up to 21.
The quarter closes 65-48. Puerto Rico is still leading by 17 points. And then the fourth quarter starts. And that's when things get scary. It starts with about 9 minutes left on the clock. Puerto Rico's up by 15. And LeBron James.
James wide open. And hits the three. LeBron James from downtown. And it's a 12-point game.
It was the first three for the United States in a long time. And then they just keep making baskets.
Lamar Odom cuts the lead to 12. Iverson for three. Boy, that's a huge bucket.
On the court, Rolando watched as Puerto Rico's hard-fought lead disappeared from 22 at halftime to just 8 points.
I would look up at the clock. I'm like, to me, it's like, hurry up and, you know, finish, right? I just want to end this game.
Suddenly, it looked like the U.S. could turn the tide in the final minutes. But then...
Right here, baby. Right here, Carlos. Carlitos.
Fight for the rebound. Here comes Arroyo.
Carlitos!
Arroyo draws the foul and one.
That was awesome. Up by 11.
Puerto Rico answers the charge. Suddenly, only 1 minute remains. Puerto Rico is back to leading by 20, and it's clear. The U.S. has run out of time to catch up. With victory near, the coach takes Carlos Arroyo out of the game.
Carlos Arroyo, the game of his life, 24 points as he comes out.
As he walks off the court, cocky as all hell, he looks at the stands and grabs his jersey and pulls forward the part where it says Puerto Rico, as if to show everybody watching the name of the place he's from.
Oh, that was awesome when he did that.
In part, it was a gesture of defiance to a U.S. player who had fouled him a few moments ago. But to many in the audience watching, the message was way bigger than that.
Fue como decirle a los tipos.
Flort says that it was like Carlos was telling the Americans,
nosotros somos los poderosos, ¿viste? O sea,
look, we're the powerful ones. In the newsroom in San Juan, people started hugging each other. Tears were falling. The final score, 92-73.
It's finally happened. The United States loses in Olympic play with NBA players. They showed some signs in the second.
Back at the offices of El Nuevo Día, everyone was buzzing to get the paper ready for the morning. They had already decided on the cover when Iram saw a photo come in that instantly caught his eye. It's of Carlos Arroyo showing off his Puerto Rico jersey. It was this quick moment on the court. If you blinked, you could have missed it. And Iram says,
esta es la foto.
This is the photo. The layout designer was like, no way, we already have the cover. But Iram's like, this is the photo. This is the photo we're going to be talking about 50, 100 years from now. This needs to be the cover.
Cuando hablemos de ese juego, esta es la foto que siempre va a tener la gente en la mente.
All night long, the island celebrates the win. The next morning, the team wakes up and heads mostly together to the cafeteria for breakfast. And as they walk through the Olympic Village,
eran todas las delegaciones.
All the delegations of athletes from around the world were there. And as they walked into the cafeteria, Flor says, you'd think it was a Puerto Rican party.
Todos los países.
Everybody, from the Germans to the Iraqis, all of them stood up, stopped eating, and clapped for Puerto Rico.
Imagínate, eso uno no se lo imagina nunca que eso pueda pasar.
He says it's something one never imagined could happen. They were getting a standing ovation from the world. And it's just a fleeting moment. That's the thing that is just so bittersweet about it. It's 24 hours of joy, and then that's it. The team doesn't perform nearly as well for the rest of the tournament. They were eliminated in the quarterfinals in a game against Italy. But when Puerto Ricans remember Athens, they don't remember losing to Italy. They remember beating the United States. Rolando Orutined says people on the island still come up to him and thank him.
It was very emotional for the island. It's the day that we beat USA. It's like David beat Goliath.
It hasn't been 50 or 100 years yet, but the image of Carlos Arroyo grabbing the jersey has become an enduring symbol of Puerto Rican power and pride. Everybody knows that image. It was even painted as a mural in Viejo San Juan. I think it means more than ever now. To me, 2004 was before the hard times hit Puerto Rico. The debt, hurricanes, people leaving, political failures. This creeping feeling of failure, of no hope, because everywhere around you, you know, you're not winning. So I think there's something special about looking back at what happened in Athens. That moment when the game is over and Puerto Rico is on top, it tells people that yes, you can win. So that's why You got to hold up that jersey and show it off a little bit.
That's it for this week's show, but you can and should go to the La Brega podcast feed to listen to the other episodes in the series. Every episode is available in English and Spanish.
The stories in this episode of On the Media were produced by Alana Casanova Burgess, who's actually leaving the OTM team this week to go on to new adventures. She's been a prime mover of some of our best work, a passionate voice, and a leader. Alana, you are a force who helped propel us forward, and we will eagerly, instantly, tune into whatever you do next. Katja Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Leadership support for La Brega is provided by the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, with additional support provided by Amy Liss.